Hurricanes around.
On your home for the Buccaneers, 620 WDAE and US 1035.
You want to come out and get a kick 180 so you can get out of here, okay?
Now, here's the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Raheem Morris, and your host, TJ Reeves.
Hey, good evening. Here we are on another Monday night edition of the Head Coach Raheem Morris Show. And disappointment is the word that I think kind of sums up what ended up happening in the fourth quarter yesterday, about this time, about 25 hours ago, as the Detroit Lions come away with a 23-20 overtime win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And we're going to talk, obviously, about that game. The positive, as we talk right now and say hello to the head coach, is things are basically where they were. You are still alive for the postseason, still games to play. So kind of on that note, we say hello and good evening.
Good evening, guys. You know, you are still alive. You know, you just like to have more control of your situation. And yesterday we had an opportunity to gain control and weren't able to seize the opportunity. And it was right there in front of us, and we weren't able to do that. So it's always a little bit disappointing, like you just mentioned.
You have now had time, and I always say this, to watch it last night, to watch it this morning. First of all, kind of on just a side funny note, how many times have you watched it? Only once or twice, or did you go over and over and over it?
Well, I watch it once when I come in this morning. You watch it again with your coaching staff, and then you watch it again with your players. And then usually at about 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock again, you get miserable and you watch it again. So I watched it, you know.
You've seen it four times.
Four or so.
And it unfortunately hasn't changed on the four times. But I said to you yesterday that you have won football games like this where the other team maybe had a chance to put you away at the end of a game with a touchdown, couldn't do it. It opened the door, and you seized that door. And you have said to us over and over and over again, got to finish the game, 60-minute game, complete game. And that was unfortunately an example of what happens if you don't finish and you're right there where they can tie it or win it in overtime, which they did.
You know, at that point in the game, you know, when you talk about 60-minute games, you're talking about somebody having to stand up and make a play. You know, our offense got us down there, got the field goal. You know, and then you go on defense, and you want to win it. You want to win that thing on D. You want to have your guys stand up and make a play. And you're looking for, really, at that point in the game, one. You know, when a guy doesn't have a timeout, you're looking for a sack. You're looking for an interception. You're looking for a big play from your defense in order to end that game. You weren't able to get it. And that's why you keep looking at it over and over again. You know, not to try to change the result, you know, but to try to find out if there was anything, what would you do, how would you do it, you know, anything like that differently. And so you keep searching for answers.
All right, we're going to get to the end of the game in a little bit. We'll obviously talk Seattle Seahawks before we're done, and we will take your phone calls as well. But just one more overall thought. You came in and said to the media earlier today at your news conference that when you Monday morning quarterback, when you watch the game tape like you're talking about, you have a perfect record. You can analyze everything and say, we should have done this, we should have done this, we should have done that. That's winning or losing. You can sit back and say, we should have won by more, we should have won this way. But you brought that up earlier today.
You know, for me, you know, usually when you're a head coach and you're not directly responsible for the offense, defense, or special teams, usually you come in and all those guys are kind of like Monday morning, you know, quarterback rating of 100 and whatever, yada, 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 whatever the perfect rating is. You know, for myself, I put myself in the fire last year. So I like to say, come in and I can look at you and say, you know, we should have finished that game on defense. You know, but as a head coach, you know, should I have let Josh Freeman try to go out and win that football game? And those are the things I second guess myself on. So I like to grade myself as well. You know, I'm a young guy. Don't have all the answers. I don't claim to. You know, if I was the smartest person in this building, then it would be a bunch of people that wasn't needed, and we'd be in trouble. So I like to go out and evaluate myself as well, to hold myself accountable, to let these guys know that I'm in the fire with them. So there will be no blinking. There will be no myself pointing fingers at people. We'll rally together, and we'll play these last two games.
Well, and that's well said on that front, because again, there are every week in the NFL, depending on bye weeks, there's, you know, 13, 14, 16 sets of coaches going, darn it, we should have done that. We should have done this. We shouldn't have gone for it on fourth down. We should have not punted to DeSean Jackson, you know, throwing things out there. It happens every week in the National Football League. All right, so let's go back to the beginning of this game. You're back home. You've been on the road a bunch. You're back home. You're taking on the Detroit Lions. You get the opening drive. You move the ball a little bit. You get a couple of first downs, but the drive stalls out. You punt. You try to pin them in. It works. They're able to get one first down, but you get the ball back. It was kind of a back-and-forth first quarter, and then they finally put a drive together late in the first quarter and got on the board.
You know, we had the ball first. We're moving the ball well. We get all the way down in, you know, potential scoring position. We're not able to capitalize on that throw. You know, Free missed this throw over the middle to Kellen. You know, one of the throws of the day that he wanted back, you know, he didn't miss many yesterday, but, you know, he missed that one. And we have to go out. We have to stop them on defense. They get the ball back. We get the ball back. We go three and out, like you just mentioned. And then they get the ball, and they put together a nice drive, you know, and really get them going with a nice 10-yard completion to Burleson down there, and he's able to score.
We saw the first two examples of them finding Megatron, as you call him, Charles Johnson. He caught one for 20, caught another one for 16. Calvin Johnson, I'm sorry, down the sideline.
I know what you're talking
a couple
about.
Of times, yeah, Megatron made a couple of plays early on that first touchdown drive.
You know, when he's able to get going and he's able to catch the ball, you know, pretty much for the whole day you had a double team on him. You know, you've done some things, you know, you play over top of him so he can't absolutely ruin the game like he was able to do later, which we'll talk about. But he made those couple catches, you know, early on to get those guys going. You know, one for 20, you know, he got another for 16. He is certainly a dynamic player, and he certainly, you know, he causes problems all over the field.
All right, they got in the end zone. They lead 7-0. And then, you know, your team has been familiar with this scenario. Okay, you fall behind. You don't let that bother you. You just pick yourself right back up and start moving the football. And that's what you did a couple of times in a row. The first drive is a 60-yard drive in 8 plays. And, you know, you moved it right down the field into the first quarter, start of the second quarter, tie the game right up.
You know, again, you know, talking about my belief in 5 and what I think he's going to do. You know, whenever I give up a touchdown on defense or we give up a touchdown on defense, no matter what, I know, always know that I got a chance or we have a chance to do something positive when you get the ball in 5's hands. And it was no different this time. He's able to move right down the field. He throws a couple balls to Mike Williams. He's able to spread the ball around the Cadillac. He's able to give some balls to Blunt. And he throws an absolute strike in the direction of Mike Williams when he's able to catch the ball and score.
Just before that play, it was 4th and 2. You're kind of on the fringe area of trying to kick a field goal, 37-yard line. Again, here we go back to those Monday morning quarterback things. But in that instance, you're thinking what there, because obviously you went for it.
Well, early in the game, you know, we had a 3rd and 1 in that situation, and we hurt ourselves all day with penalties, you know, moving us back, whether it was 2nd and long or whether it was a 3rd and 1 that went to a 3rd and 6. And as soon as we got the penalty, you know, I told Ole you had 2 downs, and I said, you can run this one, see what we get, and then we'll go for it on 4th down. Hopefully, was getting it, either get the 1st down.
So your mentality, if I can interrupt, your mentality right away was, we're going for 4th down, whether it's 4th and short or 4th and 6, we're going.
I was going for it regardless, and the funny thing about it is, you know, I was trying to talk him into a run there on 3rd down and 6, hopefully that we could pop one and get the 1st down and didn't have to make that decision. You know, but we went for it, and that's what all coaches hope for when they say it at that point, because usually that's when good things happen. So I got him to go for it on 3rd and 6, got him to run the ball with Cadillac. You know, Cadillac gets his 4 yards there, which was a great gain. We had the decision already made, we're going for it on 4th and 2. We open it up and get the ball in 5's hands. He's able to roll out there, and everybody wants him to scramble, and he finds it really has been and puts it on him. And, you know, and it was a 1st down, and he made me look really smart. So
yeah, and again, he had some daylight to maybe run it, but he had faith, belief, trust, whatever word you want to use, and I can throw this, we can get this, and Ben comes up with the catch.
You know, and there's no doubt, you know, that's what he's grown with his young wideouts, you know, and then right if he puts it on, it really has been there, he's able to drop back and throw an absolute dime to Mike Williams on a double post.
And let's talk about that play, because, again, you've watched it over and over again now. Talk about the double post part of the play, because he got free, and Josh Freeman found him.
You know, we got 2 receivers to our left side of the field, and we're running a double post. We got 1 guy in a B-line screaming across the field. He attracts the safety's attention. He got a 1-on-1 outside with Mike Williams, and the throw was absolutely perfect.
All right, so that ties the game up at 7. You get the momentum back. You're able to stop them after 1 first down. They punt. You have it at your own 23, and here you go marching again. Freeman to Ben for 11 yards. You pick up 7 yards with LeGarrette Blunt on a 2nd down play to get a 1st down. Josh Freeman then scrambles for 8 yards, and then, you know, you're moving the ball all over the place, and eventually it ends with a LeGarrette Blunt highlight reel run.
You know, LeGarrette Blunt's been showing up big for us in a lot of situations, and yesterday, he had a lot of success being able to hold onto the football the whole game, making the big plays, making people miss, breaking tackles. And in that final run there was just classic LeGarrette Blunt, you know, breaking to the outside, cutting back, making people miss, avoiding safeties, and then to be having the speed to run away from the rest of the people. It's classic LeGarrette Blunt.
You know, I mentioned this on the radio broadcast on this drive. I jumped in and said, hey, you can't say enough about second effort, extra effort on that whole touchdown drive, because on the 1st down play near midfield, you get an offensive holding. It's 1st and 18, and Josh Freeman is about to be sacked. He's about to be grabbed and be sacked, and it's going to maybe be 2nd and 20-something. He breaks away and gets an 8-yard run with the desire and the athletic ability. Shortly after that, he's scrambling on the next play and finds Ernest Graham. The ball's a little high. Ernest Graham kind of shows some athleticism, climbs the ladder, makes a leaping catch, gets 14 yards. And then on the Blunt touchdown, you got guys down the field pancaking people while he's blocking tackles. Those were three great effort plays, are my point, and that's the reason why you got 7 points out of that drive.
You know, Mike Williams is, I mean, excuse me, Josh Freeman is really becoming, you know, a playmaker, a dynamic guy. And when he has the ability to get outside the pocket, it's almost funny to me because I sit there and look at him run, and he has a funny running style, and he gets that hump in his back, I like to call it, and he's rolling down the field, and he's a big man. He's tough to tackle. It's hard for him to slide because he's so big. And he absolutely dashes out of there, picks up, you know, eight or so yards to make it a 2nd and 10, which is manageable. He dropped back again. He's able to hit Ernest Graham and, you know, really, you know, holding off defenders off his body in order to deliver footballs. And then he's able to turn around and hand the ball to Garrett and Garrett make people miss. And the second effort you get from down the field from most overall, from Mike Williams and their whole team, and not to mention what's going on up front with all those young guys, the Hardmans, you know, and all those type of guys that's out there for the first time. And it's beautiful to watch.
Well, that puts you in front 14-7. The Lions would eventually drive down in the two-minute drill and get a field goal. The game is 14-10. You get the ball with 55 seconds left, and you're trying to move it near midfield. You had timeouts left. Unfortunately, the clock's running down. You had to burn a couple of timeouts, one of them on second down. You didn't spike the ball, but a drive kind of stalled out near midfield right there at halftime.
You know, really, that's a two-minute drive right there. When they got the 3 points, it's something that you want to have back. You like to get off the field there, and you make a big play, and you go into halftime, you're really feeling good about it. You know, you still feel good because you got the lead when you go in, but you certainly like to get off the field there. That was another lapse on our part as a defensive standpoint. And then on offense, you get the ball there. You're really just trying to move the ball in the field goal range and try to get something going right before halftime to possibly steal a field goal there in some nature. But we're not able to, ran out of time. And that was the case there.
So people are wondering there on the very final play, thought about the Hail Mary pass, whatever, because, I mean, that's, again, something that when you look back on it, you can second guess everything that you do. You know, I'm sure there were 15 different things going on for third down and fourth down, but you didn't end up throwing a Hail Mary there on the last play of the half.
Well, you call rebound at that point, which we call it Hail Mary rebound, whatever you want to call it. We called it, and, you know, they did a nice job of getting everybody back there, and it's really not a throw that was going to be completed, and he threw it to the checkdown guy, Kellen Williams, trying to let him make something happen, one of his playmakers, and not able to get it going.
Well, that's why we have the head coach here to tell us what was going on when he sees the coach's tape. All right, we're going to talk about the second half. We're obviously going to talk Seattle Seahawks. We will take your phone calls as well here on this Monday. Much more on the way here with the head coach. Stay with us on the Buccaneers Radio Network.
The Rocky Morris Show continues on your home for the Buccaneers, 620 WDAEN, US 1035. Once again, here are Coach Morris and DJ Reeves.
We are back on this Monday. We will talk Seattle Seahawks. Before we are done tonight, we'll also be taking your phone calls. You can go ahead and jump aboard, 990-4620 in Hillsboro. Pinellas 461-4620 and toll-free 1-800-596-BUCKS, 1-800-596-2827, wherever you can hear the show outside of the Tampa Bay immediate area, internet, wherever you are. If you want to join us and make some comments, as the show goes on, we'll get your phone calls here in a little bit. We left off, as we customarily do, talking first half, start of the second half. The Seahawks were going to get the ball back. Hey, yesterday was not a total loss. I'm going to lighten it up here. While you were in the locker room trying to do X's and O's, I gave away a car on behalf of the Buccaneers and the Southern Ford dealers and the Florida Lottery to a lucky winner, a Buccaneer fan that just came to the game to enjoy the game and root on the Bucs, walked away with a 2011 Mustang. Yeah, so halftime wasn't all bad for that guy, for sure.
That's part of it. You know, we always talk about it. You know, sometimes you get caught up in the emotions of the game and what happened yesterday in our result. You know, but a lot of it's we're entertainers. And right now we're in a fortunate position, all of us, and to see people, you know, get some joy from whatever we can do, whatever we can provide is always a good thing as well.
So that guy awesome. Got a smooth ride, that's for sure. So that was a lot of fun at halftime. All right, so what was the message at 14-10 for your team? What was the message going to the start of the third quarter?
Where you're going at halftime, and really as a defensive standpoint, you look at it and you see you give it 5 catches for 95 yards, you know, to Megatron. And you got to try to find a way to slow him down because, you know, eventually – it's going to hurt you. You know, and eventually he's going to, you know, do something that you are going to see here in a minute.
That he did, right.
You know, so you're trying to do some things there to slow him down a little bit. And then also you're talking about right now at this point we're feeling pretty good about what we're doing against the run. You know, they haven't had any really breakout deals and not really affecting you or hurting you right here at halftime. So you talk about coming out, getting a stop, and getting the offense back to ball. You know, the best defense plays when they sit on the sideline and we're talking and we're coaching up stuff. And so we're trying to get the offense back to ball so they can have the ability to go down the field and potentially get a score to put us in a better situation.
Unfortunately, did not work out that way. And you mentioned Calvin Johnson. The one thing that you get appreciation from when you're down on field level, he is humongous. That's the reason why the nickname Megatron is there. So, I mean, he out-jumps a guy, a defender on an occasion. He can also go across the middle with that big body. He just presents problems, and a couple of times on that drive, he came up with big catches.
You know, we'll talk about it, you know, here shortly and whenever his catches come up. But, you know, some of the catches he made on the sideline, you know, are phenomenal. You know, not to take away from Drew Stanton's throws and not take away their execution as far as an offensive standpoint. But, you know, some of those catches – and I don't know too many people that can make those catches. You know, those grabs he made, the one behind his neck that looked like it was surely getting thrown away out of bounds, and he reaches up at 6'5 frame, and he's able to bend and lean and go get it and keep his feet in bounds on two catches like that. They're pretty amazing. And then the other ones, when he gets his hands on the ball and he's able to run with it, and you're trying to get to his body, and he's absolutely stiff on the defender's away, and he looks like he's playing with his kids. You know, those are pretty scary, too. So.
All right, so they get the touchdown with Maurice Morris. Again, you didn't want that to happen, but it does happen. It's 17-14. You're able to get a couple of first downs. You have to punt. You give it back to them. You're able to stop them, get off the field like you keep talking about, get them in a third and long and stop them. So that kind of ends the third quarter, and it starts the fourth quarter where an awful lot happened, fourth quarter and overtime. So let's get to the fourth quarter and the drive that would end up being a 15-play, 67-yard drive. You end up getting a field goal to retie the game. You know, that drive, Freeman makes a scramble for 14, and then after taking a sack, he's able to find Aurelius Ben for 10, and then you get a first down after that, and then you get a third down conversion. You move the ball well. It took 15 plays, took a lot of time off the clock. You tied the game with a field goal.
Great job by our offense. You know, we get down there, we get, you know, right up to the point we get first and one and a one. You know, we got to score that one. But we move the ball down well. We're doing a great job with our offense. We're being efficient. You know, other than the penalties that kept setting us back. You know, you see too many second and 15s. There's too much second and 24 with the sack. There's too much second and 15 again. But we overcame, you know, all those penalties and all those, you know, the sack. And we overcame the second and long, the second and 10 situation there. You can't have those, but for whatever reason, our offense was able to convert and able to keep the drive moving and keep the time going and really get this thing going. We get down to the 1 yard line and we get stalled, and that just can't happen.
All right, so the pass play to Regis Ben goes for 10 yards. They get a face mask. It brings it down inside the one-yard line. The first thing that you wanted to do was try to put the heavy package in there with Roy Miller. You brought in the extra blocker with Rayola. You end up having to call a timeout, and then you changed your mind on that. So let's go through the thought process on first and goal at the one.
You know, we're about to run and turn around and run it and hand it off to, you know, our big package and let those guys run it in, but we changed our mind. Decided to go with five again on a sneak, and they stuff us. And,
was that the same play as the two-point conversion or a similar play where he's got options on that, where he splits guys out and he's looking around and it's his call? How did that work?
Yeah, not that one. We kind of shifted those guys out, and it was a sneak call all the way. It wasn't the same options that he had. He just wanted to run over top of somebody and get a little push and try to get in there for 1 yard and let Freeman stretch over top of everybody and pick up the first down, but they did a great job of stuffing us.
All right, so you couldn't get it there. It's now second and goal at the one, and this time you do bring Miller, the extra blocker, in. Miller is the fullback, and Ernest Graham is the tailback. And, again, having watched the coach's tape, what happens on that play?
You know, like I talked about in the press conference, you know, we got some new guys in there up front, and a lot of these guys don't have live goal line reps under their belt, under their repertoire. And a lot of the stuff we're doing as far as goal line is all based on right now in the game, and it's all based on walkthrough, and it's all based on a practice tempo. And we had a mistake from a younger player. And again, you know, we don't make excuses. And he didn't fit it up right, and weren't able to get that thing executed. And we got stuffed, and we actually lost the yard.
You have been talking about the live stuff in practice, and fans may be listening. They're riding in their car, they're getting off work, and they're talking about, okay, well, what does he mean? They're not going live on the goal line. Take me through the thought process of what you're talking about and what you mean with how you practice.
You know, the last time you really get a live goal line rep in practice is in training camp, and a lot of the guys that we have planned for us wouldn't even training camp with us. So, you know, right there, you're behind the eight ball when you're talking about some of those things. And the first time a young guard like Hartman, you know, a young guard like Larson, you know, has a chance to get a live goal line rep, you know, is either in a big game versus Atlanta on a fourth and one, or is in a big game versus Detroit Lions when you fight for playoff position on a second and one. And to be put in those situations sometimes for young players are tough. You know, that's a part of the situation, the ball stuff that you want to simulate in practice, that's harder to do during the season without having full pads on, without going – you know, to the ground in practice and doing some of those things. So, again, you know, no need for excuses. You know, we didn't execute it, and we should.
Okay, and that leads to a controversial sequence that comes up because the third down play is third and goal at the two, and Josh Freeman lobs the ball in the right corner of the end zone towards Kellen Winslow. He is locked up with a defender and comes up with the ball. I was standing right down there in that corner. An amazing catch because the ball was kind of like a raindrop coming right over the defender, and then at the last second, K2 puts his hands up and makes the catch, and suddenly there's a flag there for pass interference. So a lot of hand fighting going on. I know this play has been debated. Talk radio, internet, wherever. What do you want to say now that you've seen it over and over again?
I know Kellen was in the back of the end zone, and I know as a defender you can't touch the receiver, and they had hands on each other. So whoever caused it, you know, it's not up to my opinion. The call is made with what it made. And we got to deal with it. So let's go.
Well, the interesting thing, too, is that Mike Pereira, the head of officials, the former head of officials who now works for Fox, he weighed in basically on that call and said if he was instructing his referees, that should have been at worst a no call. But if anything, you have a defender who is not playing the ball. This is Mike Pereira saying this, who, again, used to run the NFL officials, saying you have a defender not playing the ball in that instance. So in that instance, you have to call it on the defender. So not going to make any Buccaneer fan feel any better to hear that, but it still happens nonetheless. So it brings up an offensive pass interference call. It backs things up 10 yards, and now you're redoing third down, and you're trying to throw in the left corner, and now it's debatable as to whether Mike Williams is being interfered with. He said to us after the game, the guy's grabbing my arm, my right arm, to keep me from catching the ball. There's no call there either. Incomplete. I know, you don't want to add to that. For the possibility of who might be listening in. So you settle for a field goal there. The game is now 17-all, and I want to take me inside what you're saying now to your team with the game 17-all and roughly about 5 minutes to go, 6 minutes to go.
No, you're feeling good with the game at 17-all, you know. And for me, let me take it into my world, into my lessons. You know, I remember the Baltimore game. You know, we complained about a pass interference call. And we ended up giving up a touchdown. And that was a hard, tough lesson for a young football team. It kind of got my guys out of whack. When I reacted, Aqib Talib reacted, and we got all kinds of negative press about being out of control with a young player who was just being passionate about his football team. So for those guys, I let it go off. I let it roll off my back. The call was made. There was nothing I could do about that time. I said something to the official. I walked away. It was over. I'm looking at my call sheet, getting ready to go out there and try to get another three and out to get offense back the ball. And that was a growth and development of our football team that I was trying to go through at that point. For me personally and for our young football team, you don't want to get caught up in emotions and games. You don't want to get caught up in another man's decision. You don't want to get caught up in what can be perceived as losing focus for just 1 second in order to give them a chance to advance and move the ball based on anger from something else.
Right. And to your credit and to the team's credit, you kept your composure. You got them off the field after they made one first down. You got the ball back just like you were talking about. And now you have it with about 5:48 to go with the game tied, and you start moving the ball down the field and working on the clock, best-case scenario here to try to cap the game off, to try to win the game.
You know, our offense did a great job again. You know, still, you know, too many penalties. Had another penalty right there in all sides that put us back into a first and 15, which is absolutely unacceptable on our part. Can't do those things. You know, it's just foolish penalties that we talk about avoiding. But we're still able to capitalize again. You know, Freeman's able to find Mike Williams. Freeman's able to find LeGarrette Blount. Freeman's able to give the ball, and LeGarrette's able to make some dynamic runs.
And we had a big third down to Spurlock on that drive, too.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Big third down to Spurlock. We're able to move the ball down the field and make big plays in order to work ourselves into scoring position again.
All right, let's talk about time management, clock management, what's going through the head coach's mind, because, again, this is why we love you sitting down here with us. The two-minute warning happens. You've got a third and one. And it just seemed from how you lined up that one of the things you were going to try to do was bait them with the call. Was that the intent all the way? Was there actually a play call there coming out of the two-minute warning, or was it, hey, bark at them, get them to jump? What was the scenario there?
I'll be honest. You know, we came to the sideline as a coaching staff. We always have our audibles. We have our things we can go to. You know, third and one, let's try a hard count. They don't jump in a hard count. Let's run this play. Freeman looked right at us and said, hey, guys, let's not run a play. Let me bark out the hard counts, and then I use a timeout. I don't want to have anything in anybody's head besides we're not. I don't want to have anything in anybody's head that we're moving anywhere. So we have no excuse on why we don't move. And great call by a young quarterback.
So the intent all the way was bark at them, and if they don't jump, take the timeout.
Take the timeout. And Freeman said, put it on me. And then he got them to jump off sides, and first down for the Buccaneers, and we want to run the clock out of that.
Okay, so now let's go through that mentality because you know they still have three timeouts left and can stop it every time, no matter what you're doing, if you're staying in bounds or not. And again, this is going to be scrutinized, and what happens after is going to be scrutinized. But you hand the ball to Cadillac Williams for a yard, they burn a timeout. You now have the second down play, and again you hand to Cadillac running left, and again he is stopped after a yard or two, and they burn another timeout. So take me through again what's going on in your mind, what you're saying to Greg Olsen, what's your thought process here?
So right now you're saying, you know, it's a minute 50 left. You're saying you throw a pass, it's incomplete, they don't have to use their last timeout. Now they got a minute 47 with the timeout left, which is a lot of time in the National Football League to get down the field with no hurry, with no intent. So we're saying, hey, let's run the football. We got a great run on that we like with five, quarterback counter. He can pick up this first down, and if he doesn't, they have to use the timeout, and then they got to turn around and they got to drive 90 yards in order to win this game.
How concerned are you at that moment? And again, you've been doing this now for a little while through virtually two seasons. How concerned are you as a head coach at that moment? We could turn it over here and we don't even get a field goal.
You know, it was less about the turnover. You know, it was more about, you know, playing smart time management football for me. You know, I trust my quarterback to the utmost. And, you know, he's got six turnovers on the season. Mm-hmm. You know, that's very low if you're not keeping track of that. I trust him to the utmost as far as going out there, being smart with the football, potentially he would have threw it away, potentially picks up the first down, or potentially throws it out of bounds and does an air mail deal. So we have to make a decision, kick the field goal there anyway. You know, but we want the run, hoping he could pick it up with his legs, or also make them use their timeout like they did, and they stopped us, and he was able to use his timeout.
You know, it's interesting, too, all the debate about strategy and whatever. If you're able to pick up the first down in that instance, you can bleed the clock, you can kick the field goal. If you had scored a touchdown, and people need to understand this, with a minute and a half, 2 minutes left, the game ain't over.
Right.
They're
going
to get the ball if you had scored a touchdown on that play. So, I mean, that's part of the strategy and the thought process here of take a shot in the end zone, try to get the first down, what are you trying to do? And you were trying at that moment, if I hear you right, bleed the clock as much as anything. Don't leave them anything.
Didn't want to leave them any timeouts, didn't want to leave them any time to get down the field. But also, you would like to pick up that first down, and you'd like to either get seven. And if you don't get those things, you know, you're working on something. And
sure.
It didn't work out in my favor.
Did not work out in that instance because you kicked a field goal, and now you kick off to them, and they start moving the ball down the field. And here we go again with Calvin Johnson making a couple of plays on their final drive. Again, take me through this. He was able to hit Calvin a couple of different times. And then eventually on a 3rd and 10, hit Scheffler over the middle to set them up into field goal range. Let's talk in general terms about them moving the ball down the field a couple of times without a timeout.
You know, before that, you know, primarily this has been Buccaneers land of how you play defense. This has been, you know, classic man-free coverage. This has been classic great rush up front. We were not able to get our great rush up front and get any pressure on the quarterback with a four-man rush. We did stand up, however, and make a couple plays on, you know, 1st and 10 to make it 2nd and 10, you know, and then they make a play. They make a couple plays there. They make a big-time play, a 19-yard gain to Megatron again. They come down and we get a 1st and 10 again. We get a great stop by E.J. Biggers. They goes to 2nd and 6. We make another play there to their guys, and they move the ball all the way down the field mm-hmm. to finally getting that Scheffler gain and really setting himself up for the game.
Now, this is the interesting part of the strategy, though, too, because they had a similar situation now where they're in field goal range and can potentially tie the game. They have a 3rd down, or actually it was a 2nd down, and elected not to kick the field goal without a timeout left, and they took a throw into the end zone. And here's the interesting part. They're trying to get it to Calvin Johnson, but E.J. Biggers tips that, or actually it's Myron Lewis,
yep.
tips that ball. You've seen it on the tape. And a split second here or there, if that ball is still dangling and Sean Jones is there to pick it off, it is game over, you win, and the Lions are second-guessed forever for not trying to kick the field goal in that instance. So, I mean, you talk about what-if games.
It was certainly potential disaster for those guys if that ball's tipped and Sean Jones is not hustling. If he's loafing, if he kind of comes off his man, kind of slow rolling over to the pile over there, he's going to have an interception and we're going to take a knee and run into the locker room and be ecstatic this morning.
Yep, just didn't.
In this afternoon.
Didn't happen. All right, so they kick a field goal. They get the overtime coin toss. And, again, they got a big run right away to Maurice Morris up the middle. And one of the things that you've been saying already today to the media is a couple of times on the run fit, particularly this play in the overtime that started the overtime, the 26-yard run, just not what you want to see when you're watching the tape.
No, you know, we go to our 8-man front because you know they're going to run the football, try to go back to their normal offense. They did. We're sitting in the 8-man front. You know, we get a guy out of a gap. They make a play. And again, you don't make excuses, but when you get a bunch of new guys in there and guys start to lose faith on who's going to be there and who's going to do what, rather than focusing on just doing my job, you have issues. And, you know, we call one of our base fronts, which we've been running all year, kind of a bread and butter type of a deal. A guy gets out of a gap. The guy's able to, you know, crease us. And they pick up two plays like that. And they pretty much gain 40 yards on those first two plays, first and 10. And then you say, okay, now, settle in now. Let's play football and get off the field here. And we weren't able to.
Unfortunately, and the Calvin Johnson play on third down helped them. It was a 3rd and 8 play where he toe taps on the sideline. You know, maybe questionable as to whether he had the feet in. It was not reviewed. They end up kicking the field goal. They win the game. Final score at 23-20. And I know, you know, you had to wear a lot of hats there at the end of that game calling defensive plays, but then you got to put the head coach hat back on and deal with your team in the locker room immediately after it's over with.
You know, 3rd and 8, you know, would be the one that's going to be questioned, you know, whether it was a catch or all that stuff. And, you know, I guess it didn't really matter. You know, we didn't have the red flag. You can't challenge it. I called timeout. Hopefully we can get somebody called from upstairs and get the league to challenge it, which happens in overtime, and we weren't able to get that accomplished. And, you know, that's disheartening, you know, being that it is a play that's, you know, potentially the game winner.
Right, and in the overtime rule, so that we're clear, it's only booth reviews. The coach can't challenge. You were down there saying you got to look at it. They refused to look at it and said just play on even after the timeout, and they kicked the field goal. Again, to put the head coach hat on, what do you say to your team there immediately after, because it's a dejecting situation there?
Well, it was a situation that we didn't take advantage of. You know, it was very dejecting for our defense and for our potential to what we had to be able, ability to do. You know, we get a chance to go out there and stop those guys, come off the field, be ecstatic. You know, then again, we could say stature for losers. Really wouldn't matter. And the day would end, and we'd be right in position. We have control of our destiny, which we want. You know, but the golden part about all this stuff is we still have an opportunity. You know, we still got two chances to go out there and prove ourselves and what we can be. And, you know, like I was telling Mark Dominic this morning, I said, you know, well, no matter what happens, let's go play these last two games like we started this season. Let's go play this thing smart, fast, hard, and consistent, no matter who's playing. You know, because when it's all said and done, you know, if we're able to go to the playoffs, if we're not able to go to the playoffs, we get draft picks back. We get Gerald McCoy back. We get Aqib Talib back. You know, some of those freebies, Brian Price, some of the guys you've never seen, Cody Grimm, possibly Tanard Jackson. You know, you get a chance to see some really good football players come back on your team and in the right state of mind, and go out there and get ready to play for your following season if we're not able to qualify, as long as we go play the last two games the right way. And we also get some real draft picks. We also get a chance to go add to our talent and be better. So we look forward to what we have going on here at the Buccaneers and our future. And we got to go finish these last two.
And the immediate future is the Seahawks, and the playoffs are still on the horizon, and we'll talk about Seattle a little bit later on. We're going to come back and take your phone calls. Again, some of you have been waiting patiently, 990-4620. Pinellas 461-4620, 1-800-596-BUCKS, toll free. We'll let you have an opportunity to talk with the head coach next on the Buccaneers Radio Network.
The Raheem Morris Show rolls on. This is 620 WDAE and US 103.5, the home of Buccaneers football.
Back with head coach Raheem Morris on this Monday. We'll talk Seattle Seahawks in a little bit. By the way, Buccaneer fans, that game is changed to a 4:15 game. So just FYI, the NFL making that move, and they will show it all over the place at 4:15 coming up on Sunday. So, again, if your tickets say 1 o'clock, just be aware that it is a 4:15 game this week at Raymond James Stadium. So more on the Seahawks game coming up. Again,
Figures the 1 week I want to get back on the field as fast as I possibly can. We move the game back.
They make you move to 4:15. Yeah, that's true. Overall thought real quick for audience just joining us across the bottom of the hour here before we go to the phones. Go ahead.
Well, obviously disappointment. You know, obviously disappointing in the result and what happened. I mean, how it happened, you know, especially with our football team. You know, we win the games together and we lose games together. And yesterday we put ourselves in position to win and we didn't. So we'll find a way to bounce back like we always do. I'm very proud of this football team, what they've been able to do. I'm very proud of the guys that have been able to step up, and we'll have to do it again and prove it again.
All right, let's go to the phones. Irv is in Valrico. He has been waiting the longest, and he is on here with head coach Raheem Morris. Hello, Irv.
Good evening. I wanted to compliment the Buccaneers. What a great season it's been. I've been a season ticket holder for a number of years, and this has probably been one of the most exciting seasons. The expectations were greatly exceeded by the achievements of the team. So congratulations on a magnificent season. No matter what the outcome, It's been fun to be in the stands, and I'm sorry that so many Buck fans weren't able to attend.
Thanks, Irv. Amen. It's really been a pleasure to go out there and play in front of the guys that do come and have an opportunity to be there. And everybody, I think, is putting forth their best effort when you talk about my guys and what they've been able to do. So I appreciate the compliments.
All right. So, well, my question is, let's go to that first and goal from the one. And we've looked at Josh and how well he's done before. And I know that first when we got stuffed on. Was there ever any thought to go to LeGarrette, even though the comments about a couple of weeks ago about his lack of thud power, if you will?
You know, he doesn't have a lack of thud power. You know, it's for Irv, for your information purposes, the young man, you know, struggles when he has a disciplined run assignment to go downhill and hit a particular gap. And for whatever reason, he had to be able to find him. He had an opportunity in Atlanta. We had opportunity another 4th-and-1 some other time. I can't remember right now off the top of my head. But so we went with Ernest Graham because we have so many capable backs of going and hitting it. But at that point in time, you know, had a breakdown up front, you know, with our young guard in there. And he had a breakdown, and they were able to bust through there and really knock us back. But Irv is one of those things, one of those reasons why you give him so many opportunities. Whether it was Atlanta, you do it again, you come back. He had a great run versus the Pittsburgh Steelers early in the year. Really got him going as far as about being able to run contact. And he's certainly one of those options. He's certainly one of the guys you want to put in there. Just, you know, late in the season, you went with the trusting hands of Ernest Graham, and we had a breakdown up front.
Well, and one of the things that you're saying, I just have picked this up from being around you, from being around other coaches, from watching the game, that in those situations where you've got extra defenders crammed in there, you have to make an immediate commitment and hit it hard. If there is any hesitation, and he's very effective with the hesitation of let me find it here or there, take a little step, whatever. But if there is any hesitation, they're going to be on you is what you're saying without saying it.
To make a long story short with LeGarrette Blount, yeah, he's one of the guys when you hand the ball and immediately every coach in the headset goes, no, until he breaks outside and he runs it and he gets a 13-yard, you know, 20-yard gain. Even though it was the wrong hole, he just made his own, you know, and some of the situations where you want him to just hit the hole, a 3rd and short, a 4th and goal, or whatever situation may be, he hadn't done it in the past, so we chose to go with Ernest Graham.
And that's a thing where you're going to need probably some offseason and some OTAs and keep showing it to him and, you know, let him grow. This is a guy that wasn't even in your training camp.
It goes back to what we talked about with the young guard. You know, these guys hadn't had live goal line snaps, and he'll learn, and so are our young guys up front. Man, I can't wait to keep growing with these guys. That's all I'm going to say.
I'm with you on that. Mark is in Tampa. He is next on the phones with Raheem Morris on this Monday. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Coach. Beginning of the second half when we kicked off, Lions got the ball close to midfield without really much of a run back.
Mark, you're exactly right. Let me finish this off for you, Mark. Then if I don't answer your question, you're allowed to keep talking again. You ready?
Yeah, go.
All right, well, Logan, you know, he's a very dangerous return man. So we had a plan all day. We kick it to him sometimes. We direction the kick and put him in the corner. Sometimes he's going to squib it, let it get right past that first line, make him pick it up, have a bad situation, then we can tackle him. It just so happened we hit the ball wrong in this case, and it hit it up back right into his hands right there, and he's able to catch the ball right there at 35, and he runs the ball for about 6 yards and gets it right there to the 40. So we had a missed kick, so to speak. We had a couple earlier where we was able to bounce right past the first line, end up in the 30, end up on a 25. You know, we were able to kick it deep to Logan sometimes in directional, make him run up to it, make him run around for it, to put him in a bad situation where he can't set up all his blocks. And it was very effective the whole day, you know, right up until that point, and that kick was really, you know, came back to bite us because they scored a touchdown that drive. So you're exactly right. Go ahead and finish your question now, Mark.
Let's see if he covered it. Mark, was that what you were looking for?
Yes, sir. Coach Rich Bisaccia didn't look real happy. Was the play designed to be kicked to the other side?
No, the play design is the squib kick, like you saw, but you can't hit a defender, you know. And you know, kickers, you know, get criticized a lot, you know, but they got to put the ball down the field and put it in certain areas. You know, last night we seen a great example of it in the Giants Philly game, and you seen the coach, you know, talk to his guy, the punter, about kicking it right over the middle field to a guy like Deshaun Jackson, and you know, Logan was no different. You have to put him in certain spots, and in order to get that ball in certain spots, you got to be a directional kick, and that was the one. Kick of the day that Connor missed, and he feels.
If I'm recollecting, Mark, thanks for the phone call. If I'm recollecting, what you're saying is you line drive kicked it to the guy as opposed to the squib kick on the ground, and that's where the mistake was.
Well, you like to miss him a little bit too. It kind of went right to him, and you know, we mishit it, and you know, whatever. It's kind of like throwing a strike and bowl.
And weird things happen on returns all the time, because in the Patriots-Packers game, I don't know if you've seen this play. There's an offensive guard, Connolly, who picks it up on a squib kick and made an unbelievable athletic turn and run around the corner. You're never expecting something like that, but it just shows you what can happen.
Well, it's no different. They were doing the same type of a deal. They're trying to kick it away from the up back and keep it away from Brandon Tate, who's a dangerous return man in the league. You know these guys, they run them back every week, and you're trying to keep the ball out of their hands. And in that case, obviously the Patriots guy made him pay for it big time. My guys made us pay for it a little bit by putting the ball almost at half field, so it was a problem.
All right, we have another Mark in Tampa. This one is on now here with us on this Monday with Coach Raheem Morris. Hey there, Mark.
Hey, how you doing? I want to have asked Coach about the third and one when Freeman got him to jump off sides. If he had to do it over again, would you still have him the hard count? Because I thought it worked to the Lions' benefit by them having to save their timeout or call a timeout at the first down, as opposed to, let's just say, you run the ball, you get the first down, then they're not able to call the timeout. Instead of having a timeout at the third down, they're able to keep the clock running. You see what I'm saying?
What he is asking is that because you drew them off, you didn't run the clock there at all and make them call a timeout before you had first down. It's a technicality there in that, but you've already talked about that was designed to get the first down first and foremost.
You know, you're trying to get the first down right there so you can make a run out, then hopefully run for another first down, Mark. I know what you're saying. You're saying run it, get the first down, but, you know, you've seen in the past when, you know, that could have been a big-time stop, and then we're punting right there, and they'll use no timeouts. So, you know, our idea was to make those guys jump off sides. It worked to a T. Worked pretty much perfect for us and how we wanted to do it. You just like to pick up that next set of downs and pick up a first down right there, and you'd be really happy with it.
Again, 990-4620. If you're in Pinellas, 461-4620. Toll free 1-800-596-BUCKS. Still have a few minutes left here with the coach. And Ralph is in Bradenton here with Raheem Morris. Hey there, Ralph. Good evening.
Hi. How you doing?
How you doing, Ralph?
Good. I have more of a comment than I did a question. Been a Buccaneers fan for a lot of years, and like everybody else, I'm excited about this year. I have to say I'm probably a little more excited about this year than even during our Super Bowl year, because it's, you know, we're not expecting this team to be as good as they are, and we're just, I think everybody's really taken back at how exciting this team really is and what the future holds. But with that said, as much as I like Tony Dungy as a coach, I remember one thing that I think frustrated me more than anything else, and that's what I called prevent offense. And it's a term that a lot of us just, you know, armchair quarterbacks and all talk about, and the frustration is for us is when we prevent our offense from taking that initiative and going for it and taking those chances. I just want to say that I want – this Buccaneers team to take chances every time they can and go for it, because I don't want to see a prevent type of offense. I don't want to see that kind of ball. I'm real excited about that, and I just felt like at the end of that game we kind of went into that mode, and I'll listen to your comments.
No, Ralph, I actually brought that up today. You know, that was my decision to run that ball and try to get that clock ran out. We don't have a prevent type of offense mentality. You haven't seen that all year, and right there in that situation, you know, talking about what you're trying to do, trying to keep somebody off the field like a Calvin Johnson, you go into that mode because you want those guys to not have any time to move the ball, and you should be able to win it somewhere else. And that was one of the few times we did do that. You know, Ole, Free, they're aggressive by nature. You know, there's no doubt about that and what they've been able to do all season. Flea flickers, or bootlegs, reverses, you know, shots down the field. You know, we don't have any, you know, type of mentality of that way. It's just, you know, and you can't be frustrated with what Tony was doing at that point. Because he didn't have a quarterback like Free. You know, our deal is to ride with five, and he'll be our guy forever.
All right, I'll take you to a fun moment. I know Dave Moore is in here, and he's getting ready to do the Total Access show. But this is funny because you go back to the play-by-play. With 5:48 to go, you've got the ball first and 10 at your own 35-yard line, and you took a shot down the field on a bomb to Aurelius Ben, trying to hook up one-on-one to a similar play to the Washington Redskins. I mean, this is to Ralph's question about that was not prevent offense. That was taking a bomb down the field. And where we're going to have fun with 83 is his role is to be an analyst. And so when the second down play doesn't get a lot of yards, he's bringing up, and rightfully so, well, there could be some criticism on the game is tied and you took a shot down the field with the bomb. So the fun thing here is we're all armchair quarterbacks when we're watching, doing the radio, whatever. But in fairness, you took a shot with a bomb with 5 minutes to go trying to score a touchdown on that play. That was not prevent offense.
Ralph, what we do is a lot of fun, man. To have people second guess us, it is awesome. It's phenomenal. I remember I used to be that type of guy, and I was the best You know, I was the best secondary coach ever when I was able to second guess all defensive calls. It was beautiful. I was undefeated.
You know? Yeah.
I remember those days. I miss them.
It's amazing when your role is to break down the film and, you know, that kind of stuff, that you got them all right on that. Chris is in Tampa. He is with us here on this Monday. Hey, Chris.
Hey, guys. Good evening. First of all, Coach Morris, Merry Christmas to you and the entire organization, and thanks for a great year.
Thank you.
I just had a quick question, and again, probably just what you guys are talking about, armchair quarterbacking, but heard some criticism about the last three offensive plays, and I defended you. The criticism was, why wasn't Blunt on the field? He seems to be one of your powerful offensive weapons. You've got three plays left. My thought process, and Coach, obviously, I don't know, but my guess is that Cadillac Williams is so effective in the passing game, and that kind of keeps the defense off honest, because they know that if Williams is in there, there's a good chance you can pass. So I'm just curious, those last three plays, it didn't work out. We could have obviously won the game with a first down there. By the way, Coach, I think you always play the percentages, and I think you coached it the right way at the end of that game, and it just didn't work out. But, you know, maybe you can talk about that more. And, again, happy holidays.
Thanks, Matt. I appreciate that. And, you know, Merry Christmas to all the fans out there, including you, Matt, and that's great. I appreciate that. But the reason LeGarrette Blount wasn't in the game at that point is at that time in the game, you're in a four-minute mode, you know, kind of a deal, and you go with your ball security running back. And right now, you know, LeGarrette Blount has a couple more fumbles than, you know, any other running back that carries the ball a lot of the time. And that's a part of being a young player. You know, you got to know when to protect the ball. You got to know how to run it when you protect the ball. And we had a lot of belief and a lot of faith in Cadillac right there to go out there and be effective. And also, Matt, it certainly, you know, leaves those guys to believe that we're going to pass and we're going to throw the ball a little bit more so you can get a better shell and a better look at what you want to run at. So all those things come into play. But at that point in time, you know, I certainly wanted to go with the ball security running back.
All right, Chris, thank you for that phone call. And before we get out of here on that whole point, again, second guessers delight whenever things don't work out. You know, it's just kind of the nature of how things go. But I like what your thought process was there, because if Cadillac Williams is in the game, you like him for his pass blocking ability if you're going to throw. You elected to run two times with him in the game, which, again, you're trying to deceive the other team where they're thinking maybe you're going to throw or maybe something's going on, and you elect to run in those instances. So
it's fun to do this today. You know, it's not fun for me right now, but it's certainly fun to do this today when you're a fan. It's certainly fun to do this when you're a coach. And for me, it's a long walk around the park going through that all over again. So, it is what it is. You know, I got to make these decisions, and that's why you like to stand in these situations, but they're awesome.
Yes, and so a week ago it worked out in the closing seconds. This week it did not. The good news is there is still playoffs in the offing if you can take care of business, and we'll talk more about that coming up straight ahead. And we'll also talk Seattle Seahawks. They will be in here 4:15 Sunday. We've got that on tap next with head coach Raheem Morris on this Monday on the Buccaneers Radio Network.
Morris Show on your home for the Buccaneers, 620 WDAE and US 1035. Once again, Buccaneers head coach Raheem Morris and your host TJ Reeves.
Immediately after we're done, Buccaneers Total Access coming up with the aforementioned number 83, Dave Moore. Adam Hayward will be here and talking it over with Dave tonight. We will look ahead at the Seattle Seahawks in just a moment. I said this earlier in the show. The wild part of everything that went down yesterday afternoon and last night is nothing has basically changed. Because the Giants, well, you talk about a tough radio show. I don't know what the Tom Coughlin show is like today, but, I mean, to blow a 21-point lead in the final 7 minutes and lose in regulation because of their loss, because of the Saints' loss to Baltimore, because of the Packers' loss last night, everything's still the same. So that means you are, in a way, controlling your own destiny here in the last 2 weeks. So just take me through how you deal with that this week with your team. The message to your team, I mean, you talk to them today, you're going to talk to them all week about the approach to Seattle in the last 2 weeks.
You know what? The first thing is, you know, we don't gain any, so to speak, you know, livelihood off anybody else's misery. You know, so I'm not looking at Tom Coughlin today, not wishing not to be him. But, you know, the thing that happened yesterday is we didn't change our situation, and we could have. So I told my guys today, I said, you'd be miserable. And I meant it, you know. I want them to be miserable today. Because now when we go to play Seattle, you know, it's a little bit harder to teach these lessons when you're winning. And that's what we've been doing. It's these situations come up before, and we haven't always done them the correct way. But it's hard to yell at people when you're winning. I mean, you do, and you talk to them, and you get through the process. But Do they really get the picture? I don't know.
Because they look at you and go, we won.
Today, the sting is fresh. Today, it hurts everybody. And so when we go to our next moment, you know, we'll be ready to deal. Then we got to go to Seattle and try to do it all over again. It's one game at a time mentality. We're only promised two more games in the National Football League. I learned that a long time ago from Coach Grew. You know, some of the best advice he gave me. And you can take that for granted at times.
Well, and interestingly, when you're talking about the mentality of your team, that, you know, that psyche is a lot of this. I asked you that yesterday after the game. You're right back where you were, and now you have an opportunity to control that with the Seattle Seahawks. So, all right, they come in here off of a blowout loss to Atlanta. They have not been a very good road team. They did make a quarterback change. I'm just saying, the facts are the facts.
You said that last week.
Okay.
Put that one away.
That's right. They did make a quarterback change in the second half of the game yesterday with Atlanta, and Charlie Whitehurst played a good portion of that game. We don't know, as we're talking right now, if you're going to see the veteran Hasselbeck, if we'll see the youngster Whitehurst. But what else do you see from Seattle as they get ready to come in here?
Well, you got to prepare, you know, for whoever you're going to see. You know, you got to believe you're going to see the veteran Matt Hasselbeck coming here and playing our place. But you got to prepare for Jeremy Bates and his offense. And I know Jeremy Bates well. I know he's going to be detailed. He's going to be sharp. He's going to have a bunch of great plays in order to come in here and try to really get after us. And then on defense, you know, they're going to play hard. You know, they got a guy there that we know well. You know, and Gus Bradley, you know, they're going to play hard, physical, fast, tough, and have the same type of mentality. The head coach is a bunch of energy. They're very similar when it comes to the structure of their organization. And we're going to go and be able to study and break down their tape and find out what we need to do to win this football game. But we've got to go out there and do whatever we need to do to win, and that's because that's the most important thing.
Interestingly, they acquired Marshawn Lynch during the season from Buffalo. They've used him as the primary lead running back. What have you seen? I know you've looked at a little Seattle tape there from Marshawn Lynch and the problems that he could pose.
Well, you know Marshawn Lynch is a dynamic back in this league. He's rushed for over 1,000 at a time. He can come in here and do that any given Sunday. He's one of those guys, you know, and it's not just Marshawn Lynch. You know, they got a guy that's resurged his career out there and Mike Williams, and, you know, very happy for him and what he's been able to do bouncing back. They got a bunch of guys across the board in their defense. You know, guys like Earl Thomas, the young dynamic safety out of out of Texas. Lofa Tatupu, who's a dynamic football
player.
Aaron Curry. Off that edge, playing that sand backer position for him. And, you know, Lawyer Malloy, the veteran, that brings nothing but leadership. And it's Chris Clemens that, when you watch tape, and, you know, I've got a chance to watch him a lot from evaluating other teams. They play a lot of common opponents, man. He certainly presents his problems off that edge as well. So we look forward to the game.
All right, and it is Christmas week. Say something to the Buccaneer fans, because when we see them on Sunday, it'll be just after Christmas Day. Say something there about that as you get ready to go play the Seahawks.
I'm just going to say Merry Christmas to all our fans, and I got to go out and do some late shopping, so try not to harass me about the Detroit game.
Do you even have a list yet, or are you still compiling a list? Do we have a strategy at this point?
I am the worst Christmas guy ever. I am going to be in somebody's mall on the 24th, I can promise you that.
Okay. All right. So mark that down. Listen, thank you for sitting here with us. We'll talk to you in the pregame show for the Seattle Seahawks on Sunday, sir.
All right.
There's the head coach, Raheem Morris. Again, that is a 4:15 game. That is a change by the NFL. 3 o'clock is the pregame at Raymond James Stadium. We will talk to you next Monday night with another edition of the Raheem Morris Show on the Buccaneers Radio Network. Good night.
Been listening to the Raheem Morris Show on 620 WDAE and US 103.5, the home of Buccaneers football.